Even though the All-Star break is currently going on, there's still lots to talk about regarding the Boston Red Sox. And I did just that with Masked Live's Red Sox beat writer, Chris Cotillo, in this episode of the Locked On Red Sox podcast.
You are Locked On Red Sox, your daily Boston Red Sox podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I want to welcome you back into the Locked On Red Sox podcast, and thank you so much for making Locked On Red Sox your first listen of every single day. I am your host, Massachusetts Pirates team insider, Jake Inguszewski, and I hope everybody is having a relaxing day after some stressful and tough days for the Red Sox. We saw, obviously, the Chris Sale injury, the tough series against the Yankees, but I talked all about that with Live writer Chris Cotillo. We also touched on what position the Red Sox will go into the trade deadline with. Will they be sellers, buyers? Will they trade Bogey? Will they trade JD? Will they get relief help? What will they do with Bobby Dalbec? And I talked all about that with my conversation with Chris Cotillo. But before we get into that, I just wanted to take a second to talk to you about Blue Nile, which is your number one spot to find any fine jewelry, whether it's for a special moment, a nice present, or even for an engagement. So make your moment sparkle with jewelry from BlueNile.com, and you're able to get expert analysis 24/7 on hand from their jewelers if you have trouble choosing, because we all know how difficult it is to find the perfect piece. But luckily, Blue Nile has simple online tools that help you choose the diamond shape, size, and clarity, as well as setting style. And Blue Nile's bench jewelers will even handcraft the piece to perfection, exactly how you want it, to make each and every single jewelry piece one of a kind. So make your moment sparkle with jewelry from BlueNile.com and go to Blue Nile's anniversary sale to save up to 40% on classic fine jewelry pieces and 25% on engagement ring settings. Plus, every order is insured, ship-free, and arrives in discreet packaging that won't give away what's inside. Stress-free. Shop stress-free and find your forever piece. Go to BlueNile.com today. Now let's get into my conversation with Chris Cotillo. I am here with Red Sox beat writer for Mass Live and the co-host of the Fenway Rundown podcast, Chris Cotillo. So how are we doing today, Chris? I had some madness going on with Chris Sale, disastrous series with the Yankees. How are you enjoying the All-Star break?
It's good. Good to get a little bit of rest after the week we just had on the road in St. Pete, New York. Obviously, you know, a lot of storylines, a lot of long games over the weekend in New York. So good 4 days to reset. And then I'll personally be not doing games this weekend. I'll be in Cooperstown for the Ortiz stuff. So it'll be fun.
There you go. You must be excited to obviously cover the Ortiz ceremony and everything like that, and to be able to see it all uncovered, especially with you having the opportunity to cover him for a few years.
Yeah, I never covered him. I, you know, was started at 18, but I don't know him personally at all. He always, you know, super nice. The two times I've, you know, gotten to say hi to him in person, he was my favorite player growing up. So being there for the enshrinement in Cooperstown, being there for what should be a really celebratory weekend for Red Sox fans will be cool. I've never covered an induction like that. So something different to break up the season. It should be fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's really cool. But starting off on something that is on Red Sox minds after yesterday's unfortunate injury from Chris Sale, after a 106-mile-per-hour comebacker, which ultimately broke his pinky. Any updates on that? I read that he was supposed to see a hand specialist either last night or today.
Yeah, no, I have a text out to Heim Bloom, so he has not responded. But you know, there we have not heard anything yet. I think they're gonna probably give it a couple days to get the full diagnosis, a full, you know, second opinion, just to see if there's any ligament tearing or tendon issues, or if you need surgery or anything like that. I think that's what they're looking for. I mean, it is broken. There is a fracture there, so that obviously is going to take time to heal. He was in a splint yesterday in the clubhouse post game. Not sure exactly, you know, what the plan is in terms of treatment. It's a bone. It's not like they can rush it. So, you know, I think he expects 4 to 6 weeks for it to heal and then maybe start ramping up. That's, I think, a generous, hopeful timeline. I think if there's any other issues that they find here in the next or yesterday or today when they did the meeting with the hand specialist, and it could be longer. I personally doubt we'll see him again this season. He was hopeful yesterday, but just the reality of it, right? You know, we're already you know, in the middle of July, by the time he gets ramped up, starts throwing, that's around maybe September 1st. And, right. you know, they're not going to rush this guy back and risk another arm injury to have him pitch this year. So very unfortunate. You know, I think, you know, Tommy John with his delivery might have been, if not inevitable, then likely, just because of, you know, it happens with pitchers. It happens with guys as they age. It happens with guys with wonky deliveries. The rib thing, you know, I think people don't really know exactly what went on there, snapping on a pitch. Very unlikely. You know, you always wonder about him, you know, being away from the facility in the middle of the lockout and doing his own thing. And it was he following, you know, a different program, some of that. And so that, you know, we don't really know the details of this one, you know, just played out right in front of our eyes. Very unfortunately, you know, he finally made his way back, pitched well the other night. Finally, this big stage, this big duel on a Sunday afternoon at Yankee Stadium with Gerrit Cole. And, you know, it lasted like 10 minutes. And I felt very bad for him yesterday.
Yeah, things continue to get worse for Chris Sale. It seems like every single season. And you know, you brought up the stress fracture. I had the opportunity to ask him, like, if he changed his preparation, whether it's offseason or pregame warmup. And after that happened, he said, honestly, after I noticed it, I didn't feel it at all. And he said he didn't change his preparation whatsoever. And he said he got no recommendations other than to sit on a couch from doctors. And I was sort of surprised by that, just thinking that he might want to obviously try to avoid that in the future.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's such a freak thing. And, like, you know, you're not going to teach a 32, 33-year-old guy how to throw differently or prepare differently after he's been so successful for 10 years. So, yeah, the rib thing was weird. This one, you know, I think it's kind of more of a simple injury. We've seen it before. You know, you don't never expect it, but he was trying to protect his face, and that's what happened. So but it changes a lot for the Red Sox, you know, for the next 2 weeks.
Definitely, and especially, you know, with the deadline sort of creeping up, do you think this injury could prompt the Sox to go out and maybe get a starter at the deadline?
I think it could prompt them to sell. You know, I think that could really prompt them to maybe blow things up and sell. But I still don't know. You know, you could look at this team in a lot of different ways. You can look at it as the team that was 10-19 in April. Is that more like what the real Red Sox are, or 19-4 against bad teams in June? Or are they the team that's been bad in July and they can't win a divisional series? Is it the team that's, you know, two games out of a wild card spot, or a team that's a game and a half out of last place in the American League East? I mean, there's a lot of different ways to look at it. And so, as I wrote yesterday, I think the Red Sox find themselves in the worst place you can find yourself this time of year, which is purgatory. You don't know if you're a contender or if you are going to, you know, be not in the race come September. And so that leaves them in a tough spot. You know, you're not going to mortgage the farm and trade, let's say, Josh Winkowski and, I don't know, who name your guy, Blyce or whoever it may be, or Brandon Walter, to go get some, you know, guy that's only going to be here for 2 months if you're going to, you know, go against the Rays in a wild card series and lose 2-0. You know, that's I just don't think they're going to be willing to do that. So I think, if anything, this makes it more likely that they'll have a more quiet deadline. Though if they come out of the break and go 2-8, I think Chaim Bloom might look at that and say it's time to think about maybe trading Xander Bogaerts, JD Martinez, Nate Eovaldi, all those guys who are pending free agents. Considering where we were 3 or 4 weeks ago when they were coming off that incredible June, it's hard to believe, but that's just the way that they played the last couple of weeks. And I think, you know, they looked at Chris Sale as a savior in the second half. They looked at him as a guy that, you know, would come in and be, you know, if not the trade, their biggest trade deadline acquisition, basically, then, you know, one of them. So, you know, that's interesting. I still, you know, to answer your question more directly, I don't think starting pitching is really a big area of need for this team. I think you still have in the rotation, you're going to have Pivetta, Eovaldi, Michael Wacha, and Tanner Houck. And then you have, you know, a bunch of guys that could fill in that last spot, whether it be Josh Winkowski. I know the last few starts have not been great, but he's been okay overall. Cutter Crawford's been better the last few. You know, you've seen, you know, Connor Siebold has struggled. He's still in the mix. Brian Bayo, he struggled, but he's still in the mix. And then James Paxton, people don't talk about him. People forget him, but he's going to be up at some point in August. So I don't think they're going to, you know, go overly aggressive for a starting pitcher. I still think they do have the depth there.
James Paxton is somebody that I continue to forget about. And it seems like on his front, it's been sort of silent ever since we heard, you know, him and Chris Sale had like a step back in May. And you brought up the August, but is there any updates on him whatsoever?
Yeah, he's around the team every day. He's been traveling and doing the full schedule. So he's been in the clubhouse and will basically answer anything you ask him on it. And he said a couple weeks ago his goal is to start throwing to hitters live BPs right around the All-Star break. So right around now, if not next week. And so he's going to start ramping up. I'd be expecting to see him in rehab games by the end of July, probably, unless there's another setback, which we haven't heard about. you know, but that's a good sign because, you know, again, he's a forgotten guy, but he's a guy that has been a good major leaguer in the past and a guy that could help the Red Sox rotation down the stretch. And now maybe his you know, status is more important with Chris Sale out.
Very true. Yeah, he could definitely fill that void, especially if he's able to come back sort of like what we saw, what he did with the Yankees and how efficient he was on the mound with that. But, you know, the column that you referred to earlier that you wrote yesterday, I think it was really interesting how you brought up how the Sox are in a very similar position as they were back with Dave Dombrowski in 2019. It's not as black and white as we've seen the last few seasons where they're buyers or sellers. And so especially with all the pending free agents, like you brought up Kike Eovaldi, Christian Vasquez, Bogey, JD Martinez. And which guys do you think that they're really more leaning towards looking to trade? Because before we got on this call, like I saw that you retweeted the Poppy pay the man thing that they did right in the interview. But what are your thoughts on that? Because that's a big question mark for everybody going into 2023.
Yeah, Kike Hernandez has zero value right now because he's hurt. We don't know if he's going to be able to come back this year, and he wasn't good when he was on the field before. So I think that's a place, you're not going to find much. The guys, there's plenty of guys that I think contenders would like to take on. Obviously, Bogarts and Martinez lead that charge. If they're serious about re-signing Bogarts, maybe they won't trade him. And he does have a full no-trade clause now, which people don't really talk about that much. JD Martinez is a limited no-trade clause, so be interesting to see how, those guys decide, because they both obviously like it in Boston. And in Xander's case, it's the only place he's been his whole career. But if he's going to a contender down the stretch, or maybe he wants to see how it is somewhere else before hitting free agency, he could waive that, obviously. Evaldi's a guy that, and it wasn't super sharp the other night. Velocity was down his return from the IL. So I think teams are going to want to see him on the mound once or twice more if they're going to be interested in trading for him. But, he's been really good over the last couple of years. He had an excellent season last year. Pretty consistent this year before getting hurt. And then there's the other guys, Michael Wacha, Rich Hill, when they come off the injured list, they have a couple of good starts and the Red Sox want to sell. They're guys that are going to draw interest. Matt Strom, another guy on the injured list who people are going to be interested in. Vasquez has had a really quietly good year, something I'm actually writing about right now. He could be a potential candidate to be dealt. So, I think that there's plenty of candidates on this team. I don't know if they're going to do it. I don't know if they're there yet. I don't think they're there yet. I think it would require another kind of slide after the All-Star break. But, they do have plenty of weapons to employ in a sale. And that's why I think it might be intriguing to Heim Bloom to do that.
I hope that you are enjoying my conversation with Chris Cotillo so far, but I don't know about you. I'm getting kind of hungry, and my favorite snack to help me fill up is Built Bars, and they have a brand new flavor called the Coconut Brownie Chunk Puff. And that's right, they got the puffs now. If you have not tried those yet, they're delicious with every flavor that they come up with. It's 100% real chocolate. And it's crazy because it's healthy for you, but it actually tastes like a candy bar and it melts in your mouth. But your body is actually absorbing tons of protein, low carbs, low sugar, and it's very delicious, which is the best part. So go to built.com. in order to find all these great flavors, as well as the new Coconut Brownie Puffs bar. And we have a special offer for you. You can actually use promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off of your order. Use promo code LOCKED15 at built.com to get 15% off your order. Now let's get back to my conversation with Chris Cotillo. We never know what Heim Bloom is going to do at the end of the day, but another guy who's an impending free agent who, obviously, in my opinion, doesn't really have a lot of value. I think it's going to be difficult to move his contract. But Jackie Bradley Jr., we've sort of seen similar offensive production that we sort of expected going into the season, but hasn't really done anything to help the Red Sox out really anywhere offensively, and hasn't been as good as we're usually used to seeing defensively. So do you think that they could potentially move him at the deadline, or do you think he's sure thing to probably stay with the Sox throughout the season?
Yeah, they could just first of all, I think he's been great defensively, as we've all expected. You see just how he, it's a little harder, it's not as flashy when it's in right instead of center, but that's why they brought him back, because the outfield defense was not excellent last year in places. Hunter Renfro, people talk about, obviously had a lot of homers and he made great throws all the time, but he also led the league in errors. You don't see that from Jackie. You saw this weekend when they switched him to center and Duran to right, a couple of catches that there's no way Duran would have made. And that's why, people were really high on Duran. You just see how he plays the outfield. He's not ready to be in the major leagues out there. It's, the jury's still out on if he ever will be. Jackie, at least you're going to get great defense. And, sometimes he gets streaky with the bat and will help you out. But obviously, as you said, so far, it's not been great. you know, it's a lot of question marks of what they're going to do in the outfield. If they add somebody, you know, Jackie might be the odd man out, though I think Duran probably would be to start just because he's really not giving them anything at either side of the ball right now. You know, Jackie doesn't have that value. I think he's more of a DFA candidate than a trade candidate, but I don't think they're going to move on from him at all.
Another guy that I'm curious to see what they're really going to do with him is Bobby Dalbec. The whole first base situation is just been abysmal throughout the season. I've seen the stats that you've brought up throughout the season. Most recently, Franchi Cordero, the last five games, 0 for 16 with 15 strikeouts. And both guys just have not been really having the offensive production that we've hoped at first base. So do you think the Sox could approach the first base situation as a rental, like a Josh Bell type of candidate at the trade deadline?
I mean, it's possible. If they're going to buy, I think one of those moves makes sense. You know, not give up the farm too much. Just get, you know, a rental who can help you for a couple of months. And at first base, obviously, is a position in need. I think with Dalbec, you know, there are people in the organization that wanted to send him down to AAA last year, and they were getting really close to doing that before he got really hot. You know, he got really, really hot as soon as Kyle Schwarber came aboard and kind of pushed him out of a position. We saw what he was down the stretch in August and September. You know, I think he had like the fourth best OPS in baseball for the last few months of the year. It was excellent. People don't really remember that because he's been so bad this year. But it just seems like just kind of a lost player, a guy who had a lot of hype 2 years ago and now, you know, seems like coming maybe to the end of the road. Franchi Cordero, you know, you said that the numbers there, 15 out of 16 at bats for strikeouts defensively, still a project. Every time someone throws something over there, I wonder if it's going to be, you know, if they're going to complete the pass, because a lot of times they don't. So I do think that's an obvious area of need. I think the Red Sox banked on Tristan Casas being ready by now. Mm-hmm. It probably would have been without for the injury. And now they're kind of paying the price for that. You know, we forget Travis Shaw was the one of the first baseman on the opening day roster. It seems like years ago now, but you know, that's how kind of lost they were at the position to start the year. And it's unfortunate, but I think they're just trying to bridge that gap to Casas until he's ready. And I think, you know, without the injury, it would have been close.
Very true. It's going to be interesting to see sort of when he comes back. And I don't really expect the Sox to call him up before the end of the season. But another area that I think that really needs to be figured out during the deadline is relief help. And, you know, we heard Chaim Bloom mention, you know, around a month or so ago, he's eyeing two right-handed relievers. So what do you think that they're really going to try and do at the deadline? Do you have any guys that you might think of mind? In my opinion, like, maybe a guy like Daniel Bard, David Robertson, or something like that. But I'm curious your thoughts.
Yeah, those are, you know, the obvious names. I think the bullpen all of a sudden is less of an area of need than, you know, some of the other spots, and less of an area of need than we thought it would be, you know, a few weeks ago. Just because you look at that structure, I know John Schreiber's had a couple of bad outings in a row now, but we saw it Friday night what that perfect Red Sox bullpen looks like. You know, you get, you know, four and a third or whatever out of Eovaldi. You know, you had to bridge the gap there a little bit, but the final four innings or the final five turned into extra innings. But their goal was to go Schreiber, Whitlock for two, and then Houck. That's a lockdown four inning combination, right? Like, I mean, that you're not going to be able to do that every night, but that's a really good back end. And you know, a couple other guys. You know, Brazier imploded yesterday, and he's way too inconsistent for my liking. I think Diekman has been a complete bust as a signing. But Matt Strom, I know he's been rough lately, but he's a guy that showed you something this year. Made probably your best left-handed option. Austin Davis also had a bad day over the weekend, but he's been pretty good all year. Quietly, Salamura has been pretty good for the last couple of months. You know, he has a couple blow-up outings here or there, but you know, all these guys, none of these guys are really perfect except, you know, really, you know, Schreiber was before this week, and Whitlock usually is out of the bullpen, but there's enough pieces there, I think, where, you know, Salamura, Davis, Strom, those guys can give you something, and maybe, you know, a guy from the minors, Caleb Wart doesn't look to be that guy, but maybe Zach Kelly, or maybe, you know, Frank Herman, or I think German, actually, Frank German, you know, a couple of these guys. I always want to say Herman, it's just German. You know, there's a few guys there. I do think they're still, if they're going to buy, you know, they're going to add there. But, you know, we're finally seeing that structure come together, and Whitlock's a huge piece of it.
It's nice that we're starting to see some of these guys get their roles. You know, as you mentioned, you know, Houck sometimes comes in for that ninth inning, you know, Schreiber has that seventh or eighth, and it's not sort of the circus like we saw in April and May where Cora was still trying to figure out where to fit these guys. But right. Last thing for you, Chris, regarding on the Red Sox, what do you think really the keys are during the second half for the Sox to have the most successful rest of the season as possible?
Yeah, I mean, I think the interesting thing about the first half, as Alex Cora said yesterday, is just that there you can't point to really one area as being the issue. You know, the bullpen has been a consistent issue, but so has the offense, right? I mean, the offense has not been, as good as we could have imagined it heading into the year. I think there's a lot of disappointments in that lineup. You know, Devers, Martinez, Bogarts, those guys speak for themselves. And Christian Vasquez has had a good year. But as you mentioned, first base has been a black hole, no production. Right field, pretty much the same thing. Center field, pretty much the same thing. Verdugo has had a bad year at the plate. Trevor Story's been disappointing. So you're going at it with four or five spots in your lineup every night where you're really not getting much from them. And, you know, if Devers or Bogarts or Martinez has a bad night or a bad week or a bad series, then you're really, you know, looking at nothing offensively. And you see it's really contagious with this team. When it's going well, it's going well. When it's going badly, it's really going badly. We saw them strike out 16 times and walk zero times yesterday. Obviously, Gerrit Cole has a lot to do with that. But, you know, just in general, it just seems to be contagious. You know, there, Alex Cora always likes to preach the importance of this is one game out of 162. The next 10 days shouldn't be looked at like that. They're really, really, really important because, you know, they are going to determine the future of the organization in a lot of ways in terms of these trades. You know, if they go 2-9 before the trade deadline on August 2nd and they sell, then, you know, Xander Bogarts and these guys could be out of town. Martinez, some of these guys we've known for a long time. If they're, you know, day 9-2, then maybe they go out and get, and it may not aggressively buy, but add some guys that could help them down the stretch, and maybe they're a playoff contender. So it's going to be fascinating. And to me, you know, it's more good competition. You know, we just saw, obviously, the Rays and Yankees and the Rays and Yankees again. When they come home on Friday, it's the Blue Jays, the Guardians, and the Brewers, three teams over 500 in the playoff hunt. They go to Houston for three games right before the trade deadline. So if the Red Sox are who I think they are, which is a team that beats bad competition and then is bad against good competition, then this is not going to be a fun 2 weeks. And it could result in really kind of cataclysmic stuff for the organization. So it's going to be maybe the two most interesting weeks we've seen Red Sox world in a long time. And that's a high bar to clear because there's been a lot going on for the last few years.
Yeah, you listen out, those teams just gave me a little bit of anxiety with how, you know, I feel like limited the roster is right now. It's a lot of guys still coming back from injury. Right. I don't know about you. This reminds me a lot of last year's COVID outbreak, you know, where the Sox just had piled up of injuries. And, you know, it was majority of the roster was filled up with guys from Worcester. But really appreciate your insight today, Chris. And I wanted to give you the opportunity to talk about your new session for your Zoom sports writing workshop, which starts on July 21st. I'm actually a former student from that course, and I still use you know, your great points and your great insight in a lot of my work, whether it's doing this podcast or it's with my work with Massachusetts Pirates. And I don't know if I got the opportunity to tell you, I've been able to be a credentialed media member for the Woo Sox, and I've used a lot of your stuff during that too. Just being able to be in the clubhouse and get some of those opportunities as well. So talk a little bit about the course and why people should sign up.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, it's, as you know, it's just been something that I've kind of started over the last year, 2 years, and just for aspiring sports writers, kind of not your classroom journalism 101 version of what to know heading into the industry, but really the behind the scenes, you know, whether it's how to interview guys or, you know, how to use social media to your full advantage, or write feature stories, all that stuff. It's like 6 hours of video or Zoom instruction, you know, in a group setting, and then a one-on-one where we review your work. And if anybody's interested, find me on Twitter or you email me or anything like that. And spots remain for Thursday night. We'll start and go for three sessions for the rest of July. So it should be fun.
You also feature some great guests as well. In the past, you've had like Ken Rosenthal. For my session, you had on Patty Light, also Jared Carabas in the past too, and Steve Perrault. So definitely go and check it out. You can find Chris on Twitter. It's at Chris Cotillo. Definitely make sure to sign up. You definitely won't regret it whatsoever. But greatly appreciate all the insight, Chris. Hope you enjoyed this small, short break of the All-Star break and enjoy the Home Run Derby tonight.
Thanks. I always say I've had a lot of great guests on and Jared Carabas. So that's the end there.
Thanks, appreciate it, Chris. I hope you guys did enjoy my conversation with Mass Live writer Chris Cotillo, but we want to thank you so much for making Locked On Red Sox, as always, your first listen of every single day. Now make your second listen Locked On MLB Prospects, especially with the MLB draft happening just a few days ago. Host Lindsey Crosby is a prospect encyclopedia, and he goes deep on the MLB stars of tomorrow, and he's your number one source for all your draft information. If you want to learn about the guys that your team most recently drafted and what they're all about and what you can look forward to, this is the perfect podcast for you. So go to Locked On MLB Prospects. It's free and available wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have not yet, also make sure to follow Locked On Red Sox on Twitter. It's LO underscore Red Sox, as well as follow myself. It's at Jake Iggy, and also my co-host Lauren. It's at La 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 with three laws, Lauren with four R's. But we hope that you guys did enjoy this episode. Even though that the All-Star break is currently going on, we have tons of great content to come for you to get you excited for this second half of Red Sox baseball. Even though things haven't been going great, we're still going to bring the energy and make it fun here on the Locked On Red Sox podcast. Make sure to subscribe on every audio platform that you're listening to, or also on YouTube, because we post 5 days a week, baby, to keep you updated and knowledgeable about your favorite team. But as always, we greatly appreciate everybody tuning in. We hope that you have a great rest of your day, and we'll end it how we always end it. Let's go Sox! Peace!